Well, hello, everybody. My name is Dave Wilson, and if you can hear the sound of my voice and all this stuff works, we're about to embark on an adventure together that I like to call Dave Wilson's version of Radio Liberty. Les, Dr. Stan is away from the microphone today and for the rest of the week, and I'll be sitting in here, privileged to do so, by the way, with some very great guests. I can't tell you how much I appreciate it when people say, okay, let's do that show and let's get the word out, knowing, you know, who I am and everything. Yeah, I can see that they would join Dr. Stan in a second, but I'm glad to see that they're joining me as well. We've got Tom DeWeese today. We've got John Loeffler tomorrow. And Friday we'll have a surprise guest, so hold on to your hat. I have to warn you, of course, that the talk on this live radio program is reflective of the ideas that I have. And my guest, Tom DeWeese, and if you call in, of course, it'll be your ideas presented here too, but they don't represent the ideals or the ideas of the station that you're listening to, the computer that you're listening to, or however you may be listening to this program. That said, today is October 22nd, and do you remember what happened in October 22nd, back in 1962? Well, one thing you will remember was the Cuban Missile Crisis. U.S. President John Kennedy announced to the American people that spy planes had discovered Soviet nuclear weapons in Cuba, and that he had ordered a naval quarantine of the island nation. And one other thing that happened on that day, a 24-year-old young fighter pilot reported for duty to his very first active duty station flying F-102s over at Itazuki, Japan. Yeah, that was me. And I showed up. There weren't any orders showing I was going to show up. And that began a long, long thing that I think about all the time as to how confusing everything was back in that day of October 22nd, 1962, when I was going over there to try to sit on some, nuclear devices, I guess you could say they were, protecting us from the Cold War. Tom, you know, the Cold War, they say, is over, but we're battling a different kind of war these days, aren't we?
It never ends, the fight for liberty, that's for sure.
It doesn't indeed. Tom DeWeese, you're our guest this afternoon. I'm appreciative of your taking some time out from your work at the American Policy Center to be with us. You've been a guest on the program often, and there's always new things going on at the level that you're observing, that is on the national level there back in Washington, D.C., that you have to write about. And today is certainly one of the most chilling faxes you sent me just recently about what's going on out in D.C. But first, will you please give us just a little bit of an intro into what the American Policy Center is and why you're doing what you're doing?
Sure. It's always a pleasure to be with you, Dave. I really enjoy our talks together.
Thank you.
We are the American Policy Center. We're just outside of D.C. in Warrenton, Virginia, and we work primarily on issues of property rights and national sovereignty issues and privacy rights, personal privacy rights, and national education issues,
mm-hmm.
Which puts us up against wacko environmentalists, UN globalists, and we really see that most of these issues are correlated together. There's a defining thread through all of it, and that is this. If you are pushing for global governance like the United Nations is doing, you need to get an agenda together. And a lot of the globalist agenda is a socialist one that, well, not a lot of it, it is a socialist one. And that would be a lack of private property rights. It would be a lack of personal privacy rights. And if you're going to have citizens to live in such a global village, then you don't have people educated in traditional American schools that are taught that they have individual rights, they have private property rights, and limited government. You train or change your schools so that you train the children, you indoctrinate them to believe in global governance, to believe in groups rather than individuals, and that government is going to direct your personal family and public choices in your life. And that's the thread that all ties together, and that's why we work on those specific issues, because as we work for liberty in this country, the ideals of the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, these are the forces that are attacking and trying to change it. So that's why we work on those issues.
You know, it's just astounding to me that we can sit here in the year 2003, have a conversation about these things, and think and feel and know that there is a need to re-educate the citizenry of this country as to the ideals and beliefs of the Founding Fathers. That, to me, is astounding. It has seemingly snuck in on us here so slickly, if that's a word. I mean, we have just been sitting idly by while the schools have been transformed, the courts have been proactive in their administration of law. How do you see it as, what do you see as being the first thing that started to get us to the point that we are today, Tom?
That's, you know, I think education is a key. As they began to change our curriculum in education,
mm-hmm.
Away from a traditional one of academics, where the school's job was to teach math and science and literature, so that we knew these things and
just facts.
A traditional academic education where individuals could then make their choices in life with that kind of knowledge. I mean, I have owned my own business since I was 22,
mm-hmm.
and I've hired a lot of people in that period of time, and there is not a single person who ever walked in my door trained to sit down at a desk and go to work. If they had the ability to read and write and some of the other academic skills that we required, then I could teach them the specific job. But I had to teach them. And what we have now in our education system is we've gone away from the academics, and we've gone into training for menial jobs. And that's what the education system is designed to do today. As early as kindergarten, children are put into a course flow to decide what they're going to do with their lives. And I know when I was in school, I had a counselor who kept asking me what I wanted to do. All the way through high school,
mm-hmm.
I did not know the answer to that. And even as I went into college and I got involved in journalism and so forth, I still didn't know what I wanted to do. And quite frankly, I'm still looking. But
I often wondered what I'm going to be when I grow up, but I haven't done that. Well, so I remember, I always think of my senior year in high school, in a local high school here over by San Francisco. I had an English class where I was taught literally how to write good essays that would be passable according to what was then a standard, the California University of California entry exams, you know. And then I had physics and I had chemistry. I didn't have any math because that was not my forte, and I had done that part of it.
You and me both.
But the English and all that, and I had a class called civics where I remember what was his name? O'Rourke, I think it was. I can picture him, but I've lost the name somewhere. He taught us about the things that went on. We dissected at length the Declaration. We even memorized parts of the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, the Gettysburg Address. You know the drill.
Sure.
We have moved so far away from this now, and that scary new facts that you sent me is entitled New Civics. But my question to you, Tom, is how can civics be new? Civics are simply a presentation of facts, aren't they?
Well, that's what we were taught, and that's the way we were taught. And the facts are how our government operates and, of course, the history behind it. And you would also get into philosophy behind it. The Declaration of Independence and the Constitution were very specific philosophies of a way to look at and how government should be,
mm-hmm.
and that philosophy was that the people were the ones who were the source of power, that government didn't grant rights, people controlled the power of government to do specific services, and that's what we've called the genius of the Constitution and the genius of our founding fathers, that they were the first group in history to go out and find a government for a nation that provided for individuals, allowed them, first of all, recognized that they had inalienable, natural rights, There was no question. Where did those rights come from? They were theirs. And as the Declaration says, God-given rights.
Mm-hmm.
And then all the government was supposed to do was protect those and make sure that they were never infringed. The opposite of that is that government grants you your rights. The government decides how you're going to live and what you're going to do for a living and on and on and on. And, you know, the incredible thing is that most of the nations in the world, in history and today, operate with the second approach. So the United States has the most unique government in the history of the world. And this is why our civics classes were designed to teach us why it was unique and how to preserve it and how to participate in it.
That's the key right there.
Exactly.
Not only preserving it, but participating in it. And in many cases now, there has been such an overwhelming amount of dirty politics, if you will, mudslinging and so forth, that I know my kids who are in their 30s now, they consider all politicians to be tainted somehow and don't spend the time often digging into what the facts are. You could just take a look at the last California election here for governor, the recall thing, and all of the laughing that went on nationwide, worldwide about that. And it was simply some people who knew the California Constitution who were willing to put themselves on the line to do what was a constitutionally allowable thing to change the government. And I commended them for doing that, and I think it's very important. But it was spun in the media as being a circus, a bizarre thing to have happen, retribution for Gray Davis being elected, so forth and so on. It was pretty scary. Let me just take a break here for a second. And ladies and gentlemen, on this Wednesday afternoon, we're talking with Tom DeWeese, and he is the publisher and editor-in-chief of the DeWeese Report. He's also the guy who types all the data in at www.americanpolicy.org. Well, that's probably not true, but anyway, www.americanpolicy.org. That's their website, and I want to encourage you to go there if you want the facts about the kinds of things that we're talking about today. It's so important for you to educate yourself and know that you have facts and not fiction as you prepare to defend your views to your friends, those who are standing in the supermarket lines and so forth, wherever you have these kinds of conversations. www.americanpolicy.org is one place on the web where you can be assured that your facts are correct. Another place, of course, is the kind of stuff that Dr. Stan and his associates put out here at Radio Liberty. If you've ever been wondering how you can help get the truth out, as we are doing here this afternoon with Tom DeWeese, it's pretty simple, actually. All you need to do is call 1-800-544-8927. And ask for a copy of the Radio Liberty Information Pack. And they'll send you the current, which I hold in my hand here, October 2003 catalog of all the different kinds of items, videos, books, cassettes, et cetera, that Radio Liberty has gathered together for your education and edification. We're not going to put you on any mailing list or anything like that. You're welcome to call. The call is free. We'll send you the stuff for free. You can go through the pages of it and see whether there isn't some subject noted that you have a particular interest in, and you can call up and order that book or tape or whatever. 800-544-8927 is the number to call if you want a copy of the Radio Liberty Resource Packet. It's well worth your time to make that free telephone call. It's well worth our time as well to try to get the information out to you. We're going to be coming up against a break here. We're coming right back with Tom DeWeese. I want you to keep Dr. Monteith in your prayers as he's traveling around here, and keep me in your prayers, too, as we're having fun here sitting on this side of the microphone for a change. We'll be back in just about 60 seconds.
Have you ever wondered what the Vietnamese War was really all about? Why America, the most powerful nation in the world, spent 10 years fighting in Southeast Asia against a nation the size of the state of Mississippi, and America lost that war. Do you really believe that happened by accident? There's so much to the story of Vietnam that the American people have never really known. And in our four-tape set, Vietnam, The Untold Story, you're going to get the information that you need to understand the tragedy of that event. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for Vietnam, The Untold Story, the story of what really happened in Vietnam that has been suppressed from the American people for the last 20 years.
And we're back in, what's this, Wednesday's edition of Radio Liberty. My name's Dave Wilson, sitting in for Dr. Stanley Monteith, who is traveling, and I'll be here for the next couple of days as the Lord tarries. So we hope that you'll continue to tune in at 4 o'clock on the left coast time as we have conversations with people like Tom DeWeese. Tom, I want to read you something that is germane to our conversation here. I have a copy of a dictionary called Webster's Seventh New Collegiate Dictionary, and it says sovereignty is one that is sovereign, especially an autonomous state. And then I go over and look up autonomy, and it says the quality or state of being autonomous, that is the right of self-government, a self-governing state. There's something wrong when people start talking about sovereignty as being a bad thing, isn't there?
Well, I think so. And the reason I think that is because we have different people all over the world. We have different cultures. And, there are definitions of liberty. And as I said before, the United States of America is the most unique of all those in the world. And we have a very specific rule of law and a very specific judicial system that grants us rights and protections that literally no other government in the world does.
Or has ever done.
Or has ever done. And, you know, a lot of the countries, you may have private property, but you have that at the pleasure of the government. And if the government wants to take it back, the king, the potentate, the dictator, whoever's in charge, it's his to begin with, and they can take it back. And that's the way it's been throughout history. That's exactly why our founding fathers did what they did.
Because they were looking at England at the time, seeing the king back there, who was a despot, to say the least, and he was interfering with their lives, their ability to perform in a capitalistic fashion, because he was taxing them to death. Maybe they lived in Santa Cruz, some of them, I don't know. But they rebelled against that and talked about the fact that God had given mankind rights to be individual, to pursue happiness and capitalistic ideals. Those are the things that this country was founded on even before the 18th century.
Sure. You know, an interesting side story to that is what brought John Adams to the cause of independence. A lot of people think that the founding fathers were just a group of radicals that started clamoring for independence and then eventually won. But that's not true. And John Adams is one, for example, when the Boston Massacre occurred, which was really created as a ploy by the Sons of Liberty and Samuel Adams to get something started, John Adams was the attorney who defended the British soldiers that who were accused of starting the Boston Massacre. And not only that, in an American court with an American jury, he got them acquitted. And John Adams was very, very proud of what American courts had accomplished. About a year later, through another incident that happened with the sinking of a British ship, the king shut down American courts and put in British law. That's what drove John Adams to the cause of independence, because he could see then that under the British law, we are nothing but pawns in this, and we are, you know, he knew we were fair and we were just, and that's what brought him to the cause. And That's why they wrote what they did. That's why they tried to control the power of government so it could not do that.
That's a fascinating story, and yet we have evolved as a nation to this date, the 22nd of October, the year 2003, some 200 and some odd years past the time of our declaration, the Revolutionary War, et cetera, to be a nation of people who expect somehow that the government owes us these different kinds of things. And we ought to, in all fairness, just give them all of our money without any kind of, you know, fighting or anything, because we are wanting these entitlements. We've shifted over from self-reliance and self-starters, if you will, to a nation who has great expectations of the government. And of course, they're more than happy to be elected typically and go back there and share in that power, aren't they?
Sure. We have a system now that is ignoring the founding documents. Just literally ignoring mm-hmm. the Constitution,
right
up to the Supreme Court, whose only job it is to not ignore the Constitution, but they are
rewriting it.
And in fact, they are very, very concerned about how. In fact, Justice Breyer said this. He said the challenge for the coming generations is basically how to decide how our documents, our governing documents, fit in with those of other nations. In other words, you know, the rule of American law aside, how do our documents fit in with France and Germany and England and so forth? Isn't that why we fought the revolution? We don't care how it fits in with our documents.
Really,
that's the attack on our sovereignty, and that is the move towards global governance.
But you see, Tom, that's discriminatory and mean-spirited.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want to be that way in America today. Anyway, we've got a call. I haven't given out the numbers yet, but some secret listener devised figured out what the phone number is here. Hi, Ben. Do you have a question or comment?
I absolutely do. First of all, Mr. DeWeister, congratulations on a very timely subject. And I believe, having been educated in the 50s and 60s, that the children of today, the youth, I don't call them children because many of them are wiser than we give them credit for, they're taught to read and believe, which means they will swallow any and all propaganda. But the idea of reading and comprehending and to use the powers of deductive reasoning are what's missing. But that's my statement. My question is this, Mr. DeWeese. How do you feel the results of this PNAC, Project for a New American Century, will play upon the youth coming out, especially those going into the military or thinking about it? Because I think it might be a timely question. And I'll just take the answer on the air.
Thanks a lot, Ben, for calling.
And also, I'd like to salute Fred, another very wise listener to you guys, Dr. Stan and KKMC.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, sir.
What do you think?
Well, I think it's all part of this move. The move we have today is away, as we've been talking, away from these documents and more towards the global governance and all of these things that we do. Any of the documents that we have now talking about the future literally talk about global citizenship and global participation and global economies. And anytime you see those words, what you're seeing is a policy that rejects national borders, rejects sovereignty, rejects American citizenship, and all the ideals that go behind that. So I don't know the specifics of the program that you mentioned. I've heard of it, but I don't know the specifics of it. But I'm kind of speculating that's where it's headed.
It more than likely is, and we're coming up against the bottom of the hour again, and we need to talk just a little bit about what's going on here at Radio Liberty. You know, the venue that Radio Liberty finds itself in is very expensive to underwrite, and you can become a member of the Radio Liberty family of supporters for only $20 a month, or I like to say more, for less than the cost of a meal at some kind of a fast food restaurant for you and your family. You can know that you're standing shoulder to shoulder with Dr. Monteith and others who are underwriting the cost of putting these programs and getting this information out. It's so important that you prayerfully consider coming alongside of us and sending some cash over, frankly. Call 1-800-544-8927, and we'll be right back in just about 60 seconds.
Another of our fascinating four tape sets is entitled Concentration Camps, and it's four interviews with people talking about the move to establish concentration camps in the United States. Now, most people say that's foolish talk. We couldn't have that. And yet, if you listen to these tapes, you'll find out that those camps are a reality. They are being set up in case of civil disturbance. And, of course, the authority for the establishment of the concentration camps comes from the executive orders, which were actually put through during the time of the Reagan administration. For documentation of the location and the background to the formation of these camps, their establishment, and what may very well happen, or what they may be used for in the future, I suggest you call our 800 number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for America. Our values, our future are under attack today.
At 4:31 here on the left coast, my name is Dave Wilson, sitting in for Dr. Stanley Monteith. We're talking with Tom DeWeese on the right coast. He is the publisher of the DeWeese Report. He is the editor-in-chief of it, and he writes a whole lot of the stuff that's found at www.americanpolicy.org. And Tom, on the website, is there a way that people can contact you to perhaps get in touch with you as to how they could underwrite the cost of some of you, what you do?
Yeah, there sure is. They can email us directly from there. There is a spot where they can go in and not only make a contribution, but they can subscribe to the newsletter or buy any one of a number of tapes or books that we have listed on there. And also, maybe most importantly, we have an action alert system called Sledgehammer.
Right.
This is we've got about 10,000 people on it right now. And in a matter of hours, we reach about 100,000 people. Whenever we put out a national alert on issues that are happening right now in Capitol Hill, we tell you, you know, how to contact them, what to say, what the issue is, and so forth. And a lot of people on that. It's been called the most effective national alert system in the country. And if you want to be part of Sledgehammer, you can get on that on the website as well.
How about a phone number? Okay to give that one?
Sure.
540 is the area code out there in Warrenton, Virginia, and the number in area code 540 is 341-8911. That's 540-341-8911. And you can call, and somebody will answer the phone and give you all kinds of good information. Call, remembering that it's on the right coast over there where their time is all mixed up somehow.
But,
anyway, that's perhaps some of what's going on. But, you know, ladies, I didn't mean to be flippant, ladies and gentlemen, when I said we need some cash here, because the Lord provides the means for our production of these programs and getting these programs on the air. But I feel that it's your responsibility, prayerfully, to consider whether or not you're getting some value from listening to these kinds of programs. And if you are, I really, really, really would like you to call 800-544-8927 and make a pledge to become a member of the Radio Liberty family of supporters. We'll send you the four best tapes of the month. You'll get Dr. Stan's insightful newsletter, of course, but the best thing that you'll get out of it is knowing that you will be helping the cause of freedom here in these United States. So, enough said there. We're talking about civics today. You remember civics. That's where you got a pop quiz that said, what is it that's contained in the Bill of Rights, the second one? And everybody would shudder and wonder, and then most everybody would write down the information. But there's a new kind of civics coming down, and in fact, the government has been in the business of dictating and writing curriculum for a long time now, and it's becoming a little bit skewed for those of us who went to school in the 50s, as I have said, as Ben said. And so, Tom, what is this new civics stuff that's going on?
Let me tell you this way, Dave, by why we're talking about this today, because some things are happening here. If you remember, in 1994, we had a program passed through the Congress called Goals 2000, and accompanying Goals 2000 were national standards on every subject in the whole curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
And we said then that curricula was wrong-headed, that it was more about attitudes, values, and beliefs than it was about facts, and that our children were not going to be educated with this, other than they're going to be indoctrinated. Well, lo and behold, 10 years later almost, a report came out from, among other people, the National Conference of State Legislatures, and so they did some surveys and some reports, and they have found that young people in America, both people who are in high school now and people who graduated within the last 10 years, know nothing or very little about how our country operates. They do not participate in elections at alarming rates. They are not involved. And so in the spirit of patriotism, our Congress, national leaders, have gotten all upset and energized that we've got to do something about this. And they've come up with a new bill that has been co-sponsored by 216 members of Congress. That is it's called it's H.R. 1078 to create a new civics unit, to teach civics in a better way. And it's interesting because the bill itself has a term of a key of definitions in it, and it talks about that they are to, in these civics courses, they're to talk about key events like the American Revolution, the Civil War, and so forth. The key ideas, the very ideas we've been talking about here about limited government and equal justice and so forth, key people, Thomas Jefferson and James Madison. It says in there that that's what they're supposed to teach in the civics classes. But the standards from 1994 that have caused the problem, why these people don't know anything about civics in the first place, was written, those were written by the Center for Civics Education, CCE is their acronym. These people have now been given the job to write what they call the new civics. The very people who perpetrated the problem in the first place are now going to fix it. Now, here is their definition. First of all, they say old civics, the civics we've been talking about here, the civics about American ideals, were a heavy-handed, mind-numbing indoctrination of uncontested political loyalty to the state and to the society. In other words, talking about a sovereign nation with limited government was mind-numbing indoctrination. So, what is new civics? This is what they say. Quote, in this century, by contrast with the past, we may reasonably speculate that education for citizenship in a democracy will, with each decade, become everywhere more global, international, and comparative in curricular content and processes of teaching and learning. And we ought to think about how to improve our current curriculum framework and standards for a world transformed by globally accepted and internationally transcendent principles and processes of democracy.
Wow.
Global governance. Forget about national boundaries. Forget about individual liberties and citizenship. In fact, in the textbook, it goes on and it asks, will we, how many... how will we change our citizenship in the future, or will it? Will we be allowed to be global citizens in the future? And this is what's in the textbook.
You know, Tom, when I was reading over the information from the CCE, it struck me that whether we want to or not, we have to be, in some ways, citizens of the world, because there is an international economy. The world is very, very small now. There is almost a universal currency, be it the dollar or the euro or whatever, but everything is intermingled, back and forth. But still, we can be a citizen of these United States of America, protecting our freedoms. We have laws about international trade, about how the states ought to operate amongst one another, how there ought to be a federal government which is responsible for money, self-defense, protecting our borders, and so forth. So in my thinking, we can be a citizen of this international conglomerate in a sense, where some things happen internationally, we can't avoid it now, but still we need to be reminded that this experiment in democracy here, that is our republic, is something that needs to be protected first. But it strikes me that the money drives all this first, doesn't it?
Well, I think what you have from those forces outside of the United States is a great jealousy and a great envy and a great desire to redistribute the wealth of the United States that was created by our capitalist system,
mm-hmm.
and to loot it for them. And I mean, this is what's behind the Kyoto Accords, which will do nothing for global warming, but will do everything to redistribute our wealth. This is what's behind tearing down our borders and having illegal aliens rush in. It's behind diversity. It's all of these things are efforts to tear down what we have. And what Americans must understand, first of all, we are the global economy. The United States of America and its engine, run by free enterprise, is what creates the global economy. Everybody else is hanging on.
Right.
And if they follow our pattern and they begin to create industry and wealth, then they join it, and that's terrific. If they don't, then we're propping them up. And that's just a plain fact of it. We don't need the United Nations, and we don't need rules and regulations to tell us how to run an economy. We taught them, but they won't listen. The other thing is that what Americans have to understand is that our system of justice, our protection of our rights, the right to a jury, the right to face your accusers, all these sorts of things are unique in the world. And if a global government takes control, you won't have those protections in a court. And these are the reasons why we need to keep the borders of the United States strong, that we need to keep our country sovereign so that we have a system of justice to protect our liberty, protect our property, and not being ruled. What about a court system that has an Iranian judge or
exactly.
a Chinese judge? So that's the UN Criminal Court. That's exactly why we're opposed to it.
Let's take just a second now and have a little bit of a exercise in our minds. And ladies and gentlemen, you go right along with Tom and I as we talk about Western civilization. That is, and I don't want to be racist here particularly, but Northern European kinds of things, the United States, the places where the Judeo-Christian ethic, if you will, is the basis of law, and compare that in your mind with the rest of the world. Now we have, and take out the oil money, okay? Let's not deal with the oil money because that's not a fair way to look at things because there's a great deal of wealth in the Middle East, but they're under kings and potentates and emperors and the Lord only knows what other kinds of names for the people in charge. And just for a moment, try in your mind to understand which kind of civilization, which basis of law has done the most for you and people just like you over the course of history. Here we have freedom to assemble. Here we have the right to speak out. We have the obligation to pay taxes reasonably. Other places, whether they be Hindu, Buddhist, Muslim, or pagan, they don't have those things. Which has done the most for human rights? You sit there now and you think about that a little bit and try to figure out which one apparently is most successful in bringing about individual wealth. And that's what we're losing here in the United States when we begin to talk about Iranian chief justices on the Supreme Court of the world and not being able to be judged by a jury of your peers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And with this new civics thing from the CCE, it's going to be known by kids that it's not really important because kids are like dry sponges. They absorb what they are taught. And teachers are held in a place of respect, even though we see horrific stories about how they're not anymore. But still in all, for young children, the adult in a classroom still is supposed to know stuff. And who is telling these teachers what to teach? Well, your federal government and the Center for Civics Education. And it's a real shame that this American History and Civics Education Act of 2003, that is H.R., what is it?
1078
is coming to the fro, and nobody reads about it. Why is it, Tom, that our congressmen haven't done anything about this nor talked about it or anything? Are they still refusing to read legislation before they vote?
Yep. First of all, congressmen are basically ruled by their staffers. staff decides, the staff makes choices. Trying to get through to them, to get information to them, is very difficult. However, this bill has 216 co-sponsors, but in the last month or so, six have rescinded their co-sponsorship, including Tom Tancredo, which I'm very happy to see.
Good.
There are some people on there who are very good on our issues, and I believe are truly patriots who want to protect our liberties. One is Roscoe Bartlett. There's Joanne Emerson in Missouri. There's J.D. Hayworth. Charlie Norwood, we wrote about just last month, who is trying to do something about illegal immigration. George Nethercutt, Henry Hyde. These are people who are co-sponsoring this bill, who, if you read the bill, you won't see what the curriculum becomes. You see them defining the very things that you and I would be in favor of, but they aren't paying attention to who is implementing the legislation once it's passed. And that's the CCE. The CCE wrote it in 1994. They are very specifically saying what they're going to do today. They reject the Constitution. They reject the Bill of Rights. They talk about the UN's human rights document. So it's very clear where they stand, but they're not paying attention to that. But when we're able to get the truth to them, they're beginning to pull their co-sponsorship off of here, because I think, in effect, most congressmen, a good number of them, really do want to do the right thing, mm-hmm. but they're not getting the information.
It's almost an impossible job with the litigious society that we find ourselves in to find out the facts. I feel for them, you know, because we sometimes present our elected officials as being nefarious guys, always curling their thin waxed mustaches, trying to suck the life out of everyday citizens. But that's not true. There are some disciplined people whom we send back to Washington or to our state capitals, but they're just inundated with verbiage. And like you say, their staff sometimes are the ones who have the 40-year jobs instead of a six-year term. And so they're not getting clear information. The ideal would be, as our founding fathers set it up, I believe, to have a man with an anticipation of serving his country for 2, 4, 6, or maybe 10 years at the outside, and then returning to his own job. Isn't that the way it all started out? So there wouldn't be career politicians.
Yep, I think so. And they believed in it, and they, you know, they served because they felt service was their duty, mm-hmm. not because it was a way to make a profit. And when we began paying these guys, we began losing them. And now they write their own paychecks and get a raise every year while the rest of us are suffering.
It's a strange things how this stuff has gone on. But then in the back of my mind, and we're going to want to talk about this when we come back from our final break with Tom, why are the teachers doing this? Why is it? What is the one factor, ladies and gentlemen, that causes our cadre of instructors and teachers in the schools to go along with what I consider to be a very, very strange bunch of stuff here? Anyway, I don't think any of the teachers that I knew back in the 50s and 60s would have stood for it, but there must be an underlying reason. Anyway, we're talking with Tom DeWeese of the DeWeese Report, and the telephone number there is 540-341-8911, and the website, most importantly, www.americanpolicy.org. That's one word, americanpolicy.org. And there you can find all kinds of good stuff for your information. There are links to other places. You can just pick out a subject, whether it's sovereignty or whether it's the United Nations, whether it's land use and confiscation by our federal government, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and a wonderful thing, which I am assuming will be posted soon, New Civics Means Global Governance by Tom DeWeese. I guess it'll be there, won't it, Tom?
Very soon, yeah. Just finished it today.
Great. Boy, that's talk about cutting edge. It's one of the more scary things I've read. The Radio Liberty product resource is not a scary thing, although it is big. You can get one if you call 800-544-8927, and the October version is in my hand right now, and it begins with talking about the kind of program that Radio Liberty is. And you probably know that if you're a listener. You know that we are not a 501c3 outfit where you can deduct the generous donation that you send in every month, but we prefer to stay away from government interference in the things we do. And so if you decide to become a member of the Radio Liberty family of supporters by calling 800-544-8927, you won't be able to deduct that $25 or $30 or $50 which you send in each and every month. I want to encourage you to make that telephone call, though. Once again, 800-544-8927. Prayerfully consider becoming a member of the Radio Liberty family of supporters. It's very, very important in these perilous times, ladies and gentlemen, that you and I stand together to get the truth out over these airwaves. There are many, many stations listening to this program. Right now, we'll be back in about 60 seconds.
This is a fascinating four tape set, genocide, and one of the tapes is an interview with a Dr. Dinigan who heard back in 1969 actually a talk given by Dr. Day, who would later become the president of Planned Parenthood. And Dr. Day laid out the whole plan for America, the fact there are too many people, the fact that we're going to have to create new diseases, the fact that we're going to have to conceal some of the very obvious treatments for cancer because people are going to have to die of something. You might as well tie up cancer. An incredible interview and a series of other interviews that will go into the background of what is happening in America, why new diseases are cropping up all the time. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for copies of our four-tape set, Genocide. It's vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish. America, our values, our future are under attack today.
We're back for our final few minutes with Tom DeWeese. The website, again, AmericanPolicy.org. The telephone number, 540-341-8911. And there are, of course, on the website links to get in touch with these folks. They need your help just like everybody who's in this battle. More and more people are coming alongside of us, and I hope that's the case out there in Warrenton as well, Tom. The idea that these teachers are continuing to put out this information is bothersome to me. Teachers that I know are ethical people who I assume understand what's going on. What is it that causes these things to happen at that level?
I think you break it down to four things: training, federal grants, federal rules, and textbooks.
Mm-hmm.
Center for Civic Education that is responsible for creating this bill, is responsible for creating the curriculum that goes with it, responsible for the textbooks that are written for it, and they are holding teacher training seminars on how to teach the curriculum. So they come all the way around, and the teachers that are coming out of teacher colleges today and going into the classroom have been indoctrinated just like the children have been to start with, and on these teaching methods or indoctrination methods of Goals 2000 and outcome-based education, school to work. And so they accept those ideas, and then they're trained how to talk about it and teach it, and they have textbooks that are written specifically for it. And you know, there's only a very few textbook companies in the whole country.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to write a textbook and sell one that they can sell all over the country. This becomes federal curriculum, and so you only have a few choices, and that's what they've done. They've written a textbook here that goes along with this, and then you've got the federal rules and regulations, the Leave No Child Behind Act, which was supposed to fix all of this, according to President Bush and Ted Kennedy, who wrote it, actually puts in about $100 million into funding this program. So there's the grants, there's the straight out federal funding, and the rules to go with it, saying this is what you're going to teach, because this information is what is on the national tests that No Child Left Behind enforces on each of the schools. The kids have to pass those tests in order to have the schools qualify, and So it's a vicious circle, but they've got them all covered.
Vicious cycle is the thing that came to my mind as I was listening to you say federal and about 10 times in the same sentence there. What is it with the American people that we're so willing to send our cash to the federal government and not consider what we get back? You know, ladies and gentlemen, the money is yours. Whether you write a check to the IRS or the state franchise board, that's your money. You need to be responsible for ensuring that the money is spent in the way that you want it. And it strikes me that we have a net around us now. And I can understand people. If a teacher stood up and talked about what we're talking about today on Radio Liberty, they'd probably be fired. Well, where is he going to get milk to put on the table for his or her spouse and children? And so, therefore, survival becomes something. That's strikes me as being the bottom line there, the NEA, the money, and everything like that. People are afraid to go up against the system. Would you say that's somewhat true?
Sure, and I think you will find that most of the people who would stand up against this program and would fight it would be people over the ages of 40. Most, not all, but people over the ages of 40. You got a lot of homeschool kids that would understand, but people who are educated in the public education system and are now out among us, earning a living and having homes and children, were educated. This didn't come on overnight. In 94, of course, it really took hold. But before that, there were pieces and parts of it coming together.
Absolutely.
And you have people who just simply don't understand how government should work. And as you said earlier, they really believe that the government's job is to protect them and give them handouts and make sure that they have a home and food on the table and medical care. And the idea of individuals taking care of themselves without government interference at all in their lives is just something that just isn't comprehensible.
At 2 minutes before we have to end this program, tell us what we can do about it, Tom.
Well, as I said before, six co-sponsors of this bill have now backed out. What we need to do is get more of them to back out. The bill is the American History and Civics Education Act of 2003, H.R. 1078. Call your congressman, tell them you are opposed to this, that it teaches global governance over American Republican governance, and that you want them to take their co-sponsorship off of this. You can pretty much count on your congressman having co-sponsored it, because there's 216 of them. That's about half the Congress.
It's a frightening thing, but that's something that the listeners of Radio Liberty will do, and they'll tell their neighbors about it. Tom DeWeese, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. I really appreciate it, and I look forward to our next conversation.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Thanks.
God bless you. Bye-bye now. Tom DeWeese, ladies and gentlemen, the website, once again, is AmericanPolicy.org, and you know how important I think it is for you to get active, and that's what you need to do. Call your congressman, email him, talk to him about H.R. 1078, that's 1078, American History and Civics Education Act of 2003, that's this year. Oh, wow, so much is happening. Tomorrow we're going to have John Loeffler on the line with us. I'm looking forward to that. Keep praying for us, will you? Pray for Radio Liberty or those of us involved. Pray for our nation, because really, really, we do need prayer. Till tomorrow, as the Lord tarries, Dave Wilson saying so long.